sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, oh, why did you ever go? Oh, won't you please come back and entertain us? I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so.
Once again, it's time for Yesteryear. A look back at your favorite dramas, westerns, comedies, and musical variety shows from the golden age of radio. Here's your host for Yesteryear, Craig Roberts.
Time once again to settle into your favorite easy chair for another hour of vintage radio. Later on, we'll enjoy some crime-fighting adventure with Gangbusters. But first, on the lighter side, let's spend some time with Jack Benny. The Jack Benny program spans some 23 years with great success all along the way. In 1932, Benny was a top stage headliner when columnist Ed Sullivan asked him to appear on a CBS interview program. Benny's appearance made such an impression on the audience that later on NBC offered him a job in 1932. Mary Livingston, Jack's wife, came on board in the first 2 years, and Eddie Anderson, the gravel-voiced black comic who became known to the world as Rochester, originally signed on for a one-shot appearance, but Anderson became so popular, Benny brought him back again and again. Don Wilson, after stints as a salesman, singer, and sportcaster, became Benny's announcer by 1934. By 1949, CBS scored the greatest coup in broadcasting, luring Jack Benny away from NBC with a deal involving reportedly some $2 million. Reruns of the show continued until 1958. Return with us now to those fabulous days of yesteryear with the Jack Benny program and Trouble with the Sound Engineer from September of 1954. Another classic radio moment from the archives of yesteryear.
Major Bowes, I miss the shadow nose, Fred Allen's alley folks, the laughter of Duffy's Tavern, Helen Trent, oh, then we went to Can You Top This? Suspense in the Whistler sent those shivers up our spines. Uncle Don, I wish that he was on. Jack Armstrong, Merton Marge, Amos, and Andy. I long to turn the dial again to hear the past smile again. Radio, I miss you so. Dio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you so.
Strike program starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston, Rochester, Dennis Day, Bob Crosby, and yours truly, Don Wilson. Ladies and gentlemen, while September is one of the most beautiful months of the year, there's a certain sadness about it. Yes, many sad things occur at this time of year. Children have to go back to school, vacations are over, and people have to go back to work. The flowers wilt, the leaves die, and Jack Benny comes back on the air. And here he is, Jack Benny.
Thank you, thank you, thank you. Hello again, this is Jack Benny talking. And Don, I want to discuss that introduction with you. On our final show of the season last May, you introduced me with an insult. And now the first show of the new season, you do the same thing.
Well, I'm sorry, Jack.
You should be. And before dropping the subject, let me remind you of the lyrics of that beautiful tune written about this particular month.
The September song?
Yes, remember, Don, it's a long, long time from May to December. And it seems even longer when you're not eating. So watch it, Slenderella boy. Now, this is a new season, so we'll let bygones...
Hi, Jack. Hi, Don.
Bob Crosby. Bob, it's good to see you. You look wonderful.
Well, so do you, Jack. And you too, Don.
Thanks. I feel good, too. Tell me, Bob, where did you spend your vacation?
Well, Don, I didn't have a real vacation. You see, my television show on CBS, well, it's on 5 days a week. And, well, I was kept very busy.
Yeah, it's awful.
Yeah, but it did have its compensations. I was paid every week.
So you were paid every week. What good is that? A man needs a little relaxation. I mean, money isn't everything. You ought to realize that.
Oh, I sure.
Yes, sir.
Can you tell me where Mr. Benny's broadcasting from? I must be in the wrong studio.
No, Bob, you're not in the wrong studio. It's just that I have a new writer, and he hasn't grasped my character yet. That's all.
Well, when he gets his first check, he will.
I guess so. They all do sooner or later.
Gee, I feel sorry for you, Bob, working all summer.
Oh, wasn't that done? Gee, I took every weekend off. Gee, last weekend I had a wonderful time with my brother Bing.
What'd you do?
Well, we did a little mountain climbing. Then we went into the woods and we hunted. Then we enjoyed some wonderful fishing in a couple of streams and lakes.
Where were you? Yellowstone Park?
No, in Bing's front yard.
Now, wait a minute, Bob. I know Bing has a big house and ground, but it's not that big. Aren't you exaggerating a little?
No, I'm not, Jack. In fact, it's an even money bet that Bing's place becomes a state before Hawaii. God!
Gary may have to go to Washington as a senator. Be better than going to Pittsburgh as a ball player. Well, I guess you're right, Bob. You can have a nice vacation just on weekends.
Huh? Oh, certainly, Jack. It's amazing what you can do in just 2 days. Why, a couple of weeks ago, Frank Remley and I went way up to the High Sierras.
You took Remley with you?
Yeah. Very unfortunate thing happened, too. We were climbing around a narrow cliff. All of a sudden, Remley slipped and fell about 30 feet to a small ledge, and no one could reach him.
That's terrible. What happened then?
Well, finally, one of those St. Bernard dogs with the brandy around its neck got to him.
Well, thank goodness. Where's Remley now?
Well, the last I saw of him, he and the dog were walking off, arm in arm.
Well, Remley always was an animal lover. You should see the tender way he treats an old crow. It's touching. Well, I remember once...
Hello, Mr. Benny. Hello, everybody.
Why, Dana!
It's sure good to see all of you again.
Good seeing you, Dennis.
I sure miss you, kid.
Yeah, you know, even though I hate to see our vacations end, there's something nice about all of us getting together again.
Yeah, that's right, Mr. Benny. Here we are starting a new series.
Yes, sir.
Are you looking forward to a good season?
I sure am.
So am I.
That's good.
In fact, this will be the best season I ever had.
Why?
I'm quitting your show.
We just started. You're quitting the show?
Uh-huh.
Don, get me a chair. I know this is going to lead into something, and I want to be comfortable. There we are. Now, Dennis, why? Why are you quitting my show?
Well, I think a man who is married and has 9 children should be in business for himself.
Dennis, look at me.
Yes, sir?
Dennis, do you have 9 children?
No.
Are you married?
No.
Then why would you say you're leaving my show because you're married and have 9 children?
I did that for your sake.
My sake?
I didn't want people to know I'm quitting because of the lousy salary you pay me.
What?
I grasped your character 12 years ago.
Now, wait a minute, Dennis. Look, I'm not going to get mad. It's the first show. I'm not going to get mad. Now, wait. No, I'm holding my temper, see? I'm not getting mad, am I? Am I getting mad? I'm not getting mad, am I? I'm not getting mad, am I? Now, Dennis, look.
Put your eyes back in.
No. I only want to ask you something. I'm not getting mad. Do I look mad? I'm not mad, am I? I'm not. Now, I just want to ask you something. How can you say I pay you a bad... It's a darn good salary, isn't it?
Yeah, when you pay it to me, but all of June, July, and August, no money at all.
Well, of course I don't pay you during the summer. We're off the air those 3 months.
We are?
Oh, certainly.
Gee, and every Sunday I came down here and sang my heart out.
Well, Dennis, that's your own fault. When you came down here every Sunday and saw a completely empty studio, not a soul in it, what did you think?
I thought you were slipping.
Slipping?
And it's about time, too. Nobody can last forever.
Now cut that out! Look, Dennis, this is the start of a new season, so I'm not going to lose my temper.
But I thought...
No, I'm not going to get mad, Dennis. Just say it.
Yes,
will
sir. Yes,
yeah,
sir.
I'm not getting mad. Just say it.
Catch a shooting star. Shall I bring it where you are? If you want me to, I will. You can set me any task. I'll do anything you ask. If you'll only love me still. When at last our life on earth is through, I will share eternity with you. If you love me, really love me, then whatever happens,
was Dennis Day singing If You Love Me, and very good, too. I'm not mad. Dennis, I thought your voice sounded beautiful. The tone was superb, the range magnificent.
Not bad for a kid who's been singing his heart out all summer.
Well, Dennis, you can stop making things up. You didn't come down here and sing all summer. I happen to know that this summer you did a 4-week personal appearance at the Sahara in Las Vegas.
Yeah, that's right. I had a lot of fun in Vegas, too. I even did a little gambling there.
Dennis, you shouldn't gamble. You don't know the... Why, Mary!
Hello, Jack.
Hi, Mary.
Hi, everybody.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Mary. What were you fellas talking about?
What a big hit I was in Las Vegas.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah. I read where you broke records there.
Yeah, I'll say. When I left, they even dedicated a slot machine to me. There's a slot machine at the Sahara with my name on it.
Well, that's nothing. There's a slot machine at the Flamingo with Jack's blood on it.
Blood on it, blood on it. A little cut on the wrist, you make a big thing out of it. You come in on the first show, Mary. That's a fine greeting you give me.
Oh, I'm sorry, Jack.
Oh, sure. I bet you're not sorry at all. You don't see me for months, and that's how you say hello.
But I am sorry. And to show you I'm sincere, come here, and I'll give you a big kiss.
All right, Mary. Get ready. I'm going to kiss you.
I'm ready, Jack.
There, Mary. How was that?
You lost more blood in Vegas than I thought.
Mary, if you're going to keep on like this, I'll be sorry that you didn't stay in Plainfield when you visited your family.
Well, say, Mary, were you in the East during the big heat wave they had?
Mm-hmm, no, when it was really hot.
You know, Mary, I read one day where it got so hot. Mary, what are you staring at?
Oh, what's the matter with Don Wilson?
What do you mean?
Well, since I came in, he's been standing in the corner, not saying a thing, just sulking.
Gee, you're right. Don! Oh, Don!
Leave me alone.
Don, what's the matter with you? What's come over you so suddenly?
Not suddenly. Something I've been thinking about for 20 years.
Well, if there's something wrong, for heaven's sake, tell me about it.
All right, I will. Every year when we come back on the air, I start the program off by introducing you, and you come on and get applause, and then Dennis comes on and gets applause. Then Bob Crosby makes an entrance and gets applause. Then Mary comes on and gets applause. Everyone gets applause except me. It's not fair.
Well, if all you want is some applause, Don, we can fix that. Folks, how about giving Don Wilson a big hand? There you are, Don. How was that?
Wonderful, Jack. Makes me feel great.
Good. And, folks, I want to thank you for giving Don that big hand, because never has so little made so much so happy so fast. So there. And now, Don, that your little heart has been lightened, would you mind getting the Sportsman Quartet up to the microphone for the commercial?
Oh, I will. I will.
Oh.
Oh, Sportsman.
Hold it, Don. Hold it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Billy. This is Rochester.
Hello, Rochester. What is it?
Well, I thought I ought to call and tell you your trunk arrived home.
My trunk?
Yeah, the one you took with you when you went out on that personal appearance tour this summer.
Oh, yes. Did you unpack it?
Almost. And say, there's a high silk hat in there that I never saw before.
Oh, yeah. Be careful with that hat. I bought it from a magician who was on the same bill with me.
A magician's hat?
Yes, I'm going to use it on my television show next Sunday. He taught me a trick with the hat. I put in two rabbits and pull out five of them.
Well, he must have taught the trick to the rabbits, too. There's 40 of them now.
Well, I'll be darned. By the way, Rochester, how's the program coming over?
What program?
What program? My program, the one I'm doing right now.
Your program isn't coming over the air. I turned the radio on to the station a few minutes ago, and all they have is music.
Rochester, are you sure you tuned into the right station?
Yes, sir, and all they have is a man playing an organ.
Well, that burns me up.
I know something that'll burn you up even more.
What?
He's getting laughs.
Look, Rochester, I better hang up and check into this. Just be sure and have dinner ready when I get home. By the way, what are we going to have?
Rabbit, what else?
All right. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Jack, where are you going?
To see the head engineer. There's something wrong. Our program isn't on the air.
But, Jack, in honor of your first program of the season, the Sportsman Quartet's prepared a special number, and they're ready to do it.
All right, Don, let them sing it to the studio audience. I've got to go.
Okay.
Take it, fellas. Valderie, Valderra, I'm a happy wanderer. We love to go a-wandering along the mountain track. And as we go, we love to sing our knapsacks on our back. Valderie, Valderra, Valderra, Valderie, Valderra, our knapsacks on our back.
Yeah, I wonder why Rochester isn't getting the program. Probably something wrong with my radio at home. I can't understand CBS not sending my first program out. My second one I could understand. They think a little thing like that is going to make me quit. They're crazy. See, I wonder where I go to see the chief engineer. This must be it. It says George Foster, chief engineer. I'll go in. That must be him in front of the big electrical panel. Excuse me, are you the chief engineer?
No, I'm his assistant.
Well, I'm Jack Benny, and my radio program isn't going out on the air.
Who says it ain't?
I says it ain't.
Well, maybe it isn't.
Well, why isn't it?
I don't know, but it aren't my fault.
I'm not saying it am. Well, look, what is the reason for my show? What is the reason for my show not being broadcast?
Well, let me look at this control panel here. Now I see what's wrong.
What is it?
Well, you see, Mr. Benny, when you talk into the microphone, it creates a series of electronic impulses which are converted to vibrating wavelengths at varying frequencies, which are instantaneously reconverted by a series of transistors. Then it comes through here to the master control panel, then they pass through the superheterodyne condenser, and the volume is then rheostatically controlled.
Oh, well, I still don't quite understand from your explanation why my program isn't coming out over the air.
It ain't plugged in.
Are you sure?
Oh, yeah, certainly. You see, that's the plug hanging loose over there.
Well, for heaven's sake, plug it in.
Oh, I can't.
Why not?
Well, look, mister, I can pick up the plug, I can inspect the plug, I can dust the plug, I can polish the plug, but the union says only the chief engineer can plug in the plug.
Well, where's the plug? The chief engineer. Where's the chief engineer?
He went out for coffee. He'll be right back.
But I can't wait. I'm going to plug it in myself. I'll just pull this other plug out.
No. Don't pull that one out. That's one of the most popular programs on the air. Everybody's listening to it.
What is it?
Harry Hollick and his A&P Gypsies.
Well, that program hasn't been on for years.
Gee, why don't somebody come down here and tell me those things?
Now, look. Look, I've stood for
all... Oh, here comes Mr. Foster now.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mr. Foster.
Yeah.
Mr. Foster, I'm Jack Benny.
Well, may I shake your hand? I've already drafted your character.
Never mind that. Your assistant here tells me that my program is off the air because that wire isn't plugged in.
Yeah, I know.
And he told me you're the only one that could do it.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, plug it in. Plug it in.
I wouldn't touch the nasty thing.
You better be careful. You'll be in lots of trouble when my sponsor learns about this.
He knows. It was his idea.
Now, cut that out. If you won't plug it in, I'll do it myself.
And that concludes tonight's Jack Benny program.
What?
We wish to thank his special guests, Harry Horlick and his A&P Gypsy.
Well, this is ridiculous. I'm going home and listen to Sam and Henry.
We'll be back in just a minute, but first...
Learn more about the golden age of radio at radioyesteryear.org. That's radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear.
Who's that?
It's only me, Rochester. Any mail or phone calls?
Yeah, Mr. Frank Remley called. He wanted to tell you that he's opening at the Cine Grill at the Hollywood Roosevelt Hotel October 5th.
Oh, good, good. I'll go down and see him.
Mr. Remley said you'd enjoy it. He's got a special attraction this year.
A special attraction?
His vocalist is a Saint Bernard.
Well, what do you know? I'll sure go down and see that. Good night, folks.
The Jack Benny program is written by Sam Perrin, Milt Josephsberg, George Balzer, John Tackerberry, Al Gordon, Al Goldman, and produced and transcribed by Hilliard Marks. The Jack Benny program is brought to you by Lucky Strike, product of the American Tobacco Company, America's leading manufacturer of cigarettes.
From September of 1954, it's been the Jack Benny program with Trouble with the Sound Engineer. When we return, Gangbusters and the Case of the Devil and the Syndicate, as this edition of Yesteryear continues.
Radio, remember radio.
If you have a favorite show or serial you'd like to hear on an upcoming edition of Radio Yesteryear, let us know. Email requests at radioyesteryear.org. That's requests at radioyesteryear.org. The sounds of the golden age of radio continue with Yesteryear. Here's Craig Roberts.
Gangbusters grew out of an earlier program called G-Men, which was first heard on NBC in 1935. Best remembered of all the police programs, the show came about in September of that year when Phillips H. Lord talked NBC into developing what they called a thoroughly authoritative pilot series about the government's war against crime. Lord sold the idea to Chevrolet, then flew to Washington, D.C. to gather the blessing of J. Edgar Hoover, then the head of the FBI. Hoover agreed to let Lord use FBI files on closed cases, provided the Bureau could review the scripts, and the new series was off and running. The clue segment of the show became one of the most popular aspects of Gangbusters. After each broadcast, a nationwide alarm was broadcast for actual criminals wanted by police or FBI. Fine details of the criminal's appearance, with special emphasis on scars and distinguishing marks, helped capture 110 wanted men in the first 3 years of the run. In 1948, the program switched to CBS for General Foods. It was sustained on Saturdays until 1955. The last broadcast was heard on Mutual in 1957. Return with us now to those thrilling days of yesteryear and Gangbusters and the case of the Devil and the Syndicate from sometime in the late 1940s. Another classic show from the golden age of radio here on Yesteryear.
And now, in cooperation with police and federal law enforcement departments throughout the United States, the only national program that brings you authentic police case history. Gangbusters.
Tonight, the case of the Devil and the Syndicate, and how two desperate gangs of criminals fought a bloody battle that lasted years for the largest prize in the annals of crime.
Gangbusters has asked the Honorable Matthias H. Heck, prosecuting attorney, Dayton, Ohio, to narrate by proxy tonight's case.
The inside facts in the case of the Devil and the Syndicate.
Mr. Heck, I know that the Gangbusters audience is going to hear some familiar names in tonight's case.
They certainly are, Don Gardner. Names that were in every newspaper every day for years. But right now, they're just names. The major characters are all dead, or in prison with sentences they'll never live to serve.
Well, supposing you begin, Mr. Heck.
All right, Don. The closing events in the case occurred just a few months ago. But to understand these men, we should go back more than 24 years. One bright spring morning in Chicago, a young man crossed North State Street in front of the Holy Name Cathedral. As he approached the other side, he saw the florist shop for which he was looking. He stopped for a moment to glance at a wedding wreath in the window. Then he walked toward the door.
Well, here goes.
Yes, sir? Can I help you?
Yeah. First, you can give me one of them carnations.
Yes, sir. They're very pretty. One of these?
No, one of the red ones. I like red.
Yes, sir. Shall I pin it in your lapel?
Yeah, why not? What do you do after you get through here?
I go to night school to learn jiu-jitsu.
No kidding.
There you are.
How much?
25 cents.
Cheap enough. Catch.
Thank you. Call again.
Come on and back and tell your boss I want to see him.
My boss?
O'Banion. Tell him George is here.
Do you have an appointment?
Who needs an appointment?
Who is it, Lillian?
Well,
Are you O'Banion?
That depends who you are.
My name is Moran. George Moran.
Lillian, run down the corner and get me the evening papers.
Yes, sir, right away. I'll be right back.
Cute trick.
She's like the flower business, Moran. A front. So hands off.
Okay.
That recommendation from Rossi rated you pretty high.
We got along. Good as anybody can get along in Joliet.
Things have changed since you went in, Moran.
So I hear.
They got a law now. The 18th Amendment, they call it. They want people to stop drinking. But they made a mistake. Too many people don't like that law. When there's a law people don't like, somebody's bound to make a fortune out of it.
We even had bootleggers in Joliet.
Come on in back. I want you to meet one of my friends.
Yeah, sure.
He's one of my vice presidents. You'll be another.
My wife.
I want you to meet George Moran. Earl Weiss.
Ways to meet you, Bugs.
The name ain't Bugs. It's George.
Okay, no harm in it. I just heard they called you Bugs.
Nobody calls me Bugs. Never.
Take it easy, George. We don't go for rough stuff. And we don't go for rough talk unless it's called for.
Okay.
I said things were changing. We're in business. We're legit, practically.
Just tell me what I do and when I start doing it.
You'll have plenty to do.
We're organizing the whole North Side. Every drop of booze and every mug of beer that's sold on the North Side will be ours.
That's all right with me. But suppose some other guys get different ideas.
That's one of the reasons I'm putting you on the payroll, Moran.
Don't worry. Nobody'll muscle in.
Hey, muscle in. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. I'll have to remember that. Not bad.
It's like this, Moran. There's a bunch over on the west side and the south side doing the same thing we are. So long as they stay there and don't muscle in, nobody will get hurt.
And it's working out okay. I've got an agreement with the guy that runs things, Johnny Torrio.
Sounds as easy as selling flowers.
I don't know. That Torrio may be all right, but he just brought a guy in from Brooklyn, a bad actor.
Yeah? I know a lot of guys from Brooklyn. Who is he?
What's his name, boss?
Al. Al something or other.
Yeah, that's it. Al Capone.
So, Don, the Chicago gangs grew stronger as each of them strained to expand beyond the limits of the agreed territories. For 3 years, no gang leader would make the first move because he could foresee the violence that would follow. Then one day, Bugs Moran had an urgent summons from the operator of a speakeasy on the north side. He walked into the smoke-filled place and saw the operator sitting at the bar.
Hello, Patsy.
Oh, Moran. Sit down.
Yeah.
Harry, straight bourbon for Mr. Moran.
Okay.
Well, what's your trouble?
Maybe it's your trouble, Moran.
What do you mean?
Just put the bottle down, Harry. Go take care of them customers down there.
Fine.
Don't talk in riddles, Patsy.
Pour yourself a drink.
Thanks. Luck.
Good stuff, huh?
Come on, Patsy. I didn't come over here to drink your booze. What's the trouble?
You just drank it.
Now, look.
Take a squint at that bottle.
Hey. Where'd you get that stuff?
I bought it.
You'll get in trouble, Patsy, making buys from outside.
Hey, back the truck up here, Moran. They unloaded 40 cases. They said take the stuff or take a dose of lead. I took the stuff. Ain't bad, is it?
Who was it?
How should I know? Three gorillas with a look in their eye.
You pulling a fast one, Patsy?
Me? I buy your rot gut and pay you good for peace and quiet. I pay you to keep guys like that off my neck.
They'll be off your neck, Patsy. Don't worry about that.
Okay.
So long. And thanks for the drink.
Don't mention it.
You got too hot a temper, Moran. I said this is business. No rough stuff unless it's called for.
Those monkeys won't understand nothing except rough stuff, O'Banion. First it's one joint, then it's another. Then they'll be all over the north side.
It's a mistake.
Johnny Torrio, don't make mistakes. Where's Weiss, anyway?
I told him the meeting was off. It's all settled.
Settled? How?
I put in a call for Johnny Torrio. He's going to get it straightened out and call me back.
Yeah? Well, if you...
Maybe that's him.
Yeah, maybe it ain't.
Just do your job, Moran. I'll handle this. Hello?
O'Banion?
Yeah? Who is it?
Johnny Torrio asked me to call. This is Al Capone.
Oh, there's Al. You checked up on that deal?
Yeah, and as far as we know, it wasn't our boys that made the sale.
Oh?
We don't like that kind of business either, O'Banion. We want to put a stop to it as much as you.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Johnny Torrio said get the details. He said work with O'Banion.
It's a deal, Capone.
Suppose I send a couple of boys around tonight to see you.
Make it tomorrow, Capone, at the flower shop.
Yeah, at the flower shop. They'll be there.
Lillian. Lillian?
Yes, Mr. O'Banion.
Oh, Mr. Moran.
Yes, sir, I'll...
Oh, and Lillian.
Yes, sir?
First, bring me that bird seed. Kankakee's hungry. Aren't you, Kankakee? Huh? There. See?
Oh, here comes some customers.
Yes.
I'll wait on them first.
They're not customers. Just some gentlemen I'm expecting. Go in back. Make that call to Moran.
Yes, sir. I'll do it right now.
Oh. Come in, boys. Come in.
Hello, Bannon. We're from Al Capone.
Glad to see you.
Oh, yeah.
Well, how are we going to straighten out this mess?
Capone says it's easy.
Then let's get to it.
Sure, Bannon. Let's get to it.
Hey, what's the idea of the guns?
So long, pal. Come on, let's get out of here.
Thus, Don, the two leading gangs of Chicago's racketeers declared war on each other. A gang war that lasted many years, and bloodshed mounted with the months.
Now, back to Gangbusters. You've told us, Mr. Heck, how gang war flared up in Chicago after the Johnny Torrio Al Capone syndicate sought to invade the North Side and murdered gang leader Diana Bannon.
Yes, Don, and the story of the killing was the news sensation of the day. O'Banion's principal lieutenants, Earl Little Jaime Weiss and George Bugs Moran, were on hand at the funeral parlor where O'Banion's body was on exhibition in a $10,000 casket surrounded by tons of gaudy floral pieces. There they planned retaliation, not so much to avenge O'Banion as to salve their own peculiar pride.
We gotta go through with it, Weiss. We gotta run Torrio and Capone into the ground.
You're wrong, Moran. Nobody can make out if we spend our time killing each other. We're in it for dough. That's the way O'Banion wanted it.
Yeah. And look where O'Banion is. You don't want to sit around and let Capone and Torrio give you the same kind of going over, do you?
Maybe we could get the whole thing settled.
No, settled. You talk like a maniac. There's only one way it's gonna be settled. That's when we got the whole town.
I don't know. I was just figuring...
Quiet, yes, only.
Mr. Weiss, can I see you a minute?
What's the matter, Lillian?
Well, another floral piece just arrived, and I thought...
Well, then bring it in.
But there isn't room for any more flowers. Besides, this is bigger than anything in here. It's huge.
Who sent it?
I don't know. I didn't open the card.
Come on, Moran. Let's have a look.
Yeah, sure.
Where are these posies?
Out in the anteroom. This way.
They gotta be brought in the line, Weiss. That's the only way.
We'll see.
Right in here. There it is.
What for crying out loud? Who spent all that dough?
It's pretty, huh?
Oh, it's hideous.
Where's the card?
This must be it.
How many men did it take to carry it in? Five? Well, who's it from, Moran?
Here. Read it yourself.
Sure. Rest in peace, Johnny Torrio and Al Capone.
A dirty, rotten...
You're right, Moran. They need a lesson. Put me at those wheels.
No, don't.
Boy,
don't.
Yeah, let me...
Don't get worked out.
Who cares how
much... Soon, Don, George Bugs Moran and Earl Little Jaime Weiss sought and got revenge on gangster Johnny Torrio. Thus, the notorious Al Capone came into command. The war between the two factions continued, with one or two gangsters losing their lives every week. Finally, Little Jaime Weiss got his, and Bugs Moran became undisputed head of the North Side mobsters. But the pyramid of gang murders didn't help, and both sides knew it. So it was arranged one day that Bugs Moran walk alone and unarmed down a long hotel corridor toward a room at the end. As he walked, he looked carefully at each closed door he passed. Then, on reaching the end of the corridor, he stopped and opened the door.
Come in, Moran. Sit down, make yourself at home.
Thanks, Capone.
Well, are you ready?
Yeah, Capone. I'm ready.
It's about time we figured we weren't doing ourselves good.
What are your terms?
We split up the city and county. You stay on your side, I stay on mine.
Whose side begins where?
We go back to the old territories, the ones set up by Johnny Torrio and Diane O'Banion.
You
It's a deal. And the deal covers everything. The booze, the beer, the dogs, the ladies.
Everything, Capone.
Okay. We'll shake on it.
I can still remember Diane O'Banion went to shake hands. He got led.
We shake, or there's no deal.
I can take the deal or leave it, Capone.
You're acting pretty dumb for a smart cookie, Moran.
Guy can afford to be dumb if he's lucky.
Well, that's the way you want it, Moran.
Put it here, Al.
That's more like it. We'll show them how to run a town.
Got no doubt about us running the town, Al. Let's just keep from trying to run each other.
Hello, Moran. How are you?
Hello, Betty.
You remember that guy I was telling you about?
Guy? What guy?
Guy with the idea.
With the idea? Oh, yeah.
I got him back in my office.
Well, let's go see him.
I think it'll work, Moran. Ought to be good for plenty each month.
What'd you say this guy's name was?
Joe. Joe Ruggieri.
Okay, open up.
Hello, Joe. I want you to know George Moran. Glad to see you.
Patsy tells me you got a new grift.
Yeah. If you go for it, Moran, do I get a spot?
Sure. I get a million spots. Come on, hurry up, though. I gotta meet a girl outside.
Well, the idea is this. There's lots of little guys in business. Big ones, too.
Yes, I know.
They got all kinds of stores. So we form all kinds of organizations. All the cleaners in one association, all the laundries in another. Follow me?
Yeah, go on.
So before we start these associations, a cleaner here, a cleaner there is gonna have trouble. A brick through his window, a stink bomb, maybe. So they join the association to protect their business.
And?
And they get protection. Without joining the organization, they get no protection.
Good stiff dues.
Right. Good stiff dues. To us. Well, what do you think of it?
It stinks.
But it's a cinch.
I said it stinks. Go on, get out.
George.
It'll work. It'll make millions. I said get out. Now hit the ties, you crumb bun.
Okay. It's just an idea. So long. What was the idea, Moran? That guy had something.
Any?
Sure. Be a cinch to operate. You got the strong arm, boys. That's all you need.
I know it. You try it out first in the cleaning shops.
Hey, you told Joe you didn't go for the idea.
Sure. Why should I cut him into the deal, a stranger?
Yeah, why should you?
Boy, I could see this thing spreading all over the city. Maybe farther. Maybe to New York.
Yeah? What about Capone?
Well, what about him?
Capone ain't gonna like it.
I am not like it. There's been peace and quiet too long. I'm sick of it. Come on. Hello?
Moran?
Yeah?
Al Capone. How's it going?
No complaints, Al.
Well, I got a complaint.
Have you?
Yeah. That protection racket of yours is a pretty good idea, Moran.
Yeah. I like it.
But it's covering too much ground.
It'll cover more ground, Al. Nothing like it was included in the agreement.
Well, that's the way you want it.
It is.
Okay, Moran. Be seeing you.
That dawn was the beginning of another flare-up between Chicago's rival gangs. And the direct result was the most sensational and blood-curdling event to arise out of the long history of Chicago's mobsterism.
You were telling us, Mr. Heck, that gang war between the Al Capone and Bugs Moran mobs broke out all over again.
That's right, Don. There were many killings on both sides. With the feud at its height, Bugs Moran called a meeting of a dozen of his henchmen at the garage on North Clark Street he sometimes used as headquarters. By a little after 10 in the morning, 8 of his lieutenants had arrived.
So what, Moran? So they're a little bit late.
When I tell guys to be here, I mean it. Now, will you monkeys keep quiet? How can anybody think?
Okay, boys, don't get excited.
Now, just keep it quiet.
They'll be along in a minute. What do you say we get some coffee?
Coffee.
Come on. You can relax.
All right, Patsy. I guess I can stand some relaxing, too.
Well, you knew what was going to happen. You knew Capone wouldn't sit still.
Okay. I heard all about it. I want to hear.
Get out the side door and cut through the alley. It's shorter.
Anyways, all right. You guys stick here. I'll be right back.
Are you going out to buy me a present, boss?
Present? Yeah, I'll give you a present.
But, boss, it's Valentine's Day.
Oh, Valentine's Day, huh? I'll get busy. You think it's the 4th of July. Come on, Patsy. Let's go.
You ought to take it easy, Moran. You'll get Capone in the end.
Just take me to the coffee.
Sure. Maybe you could get the old agreement working again.
I don't want to hear no more about it. Take a look around before we hit the sidewalk.
Yeah. No, there's nothing. Hey.
What?
Cops.
Huh?
Just pulled up in front of the garage.
Get close to the wall. And you haven't got enough trouble now. Cops.
All right, let's go.
With machine guns.
Come on.
Hey, those aren't cops. They're Capone guys.
Okay, get inside. Let's do a good job.
What do you say, boys? Let's go get them.
No, stick where you are.
We ought to warn the guys.
There's 7 of them left in there. They can take care of themselves.
Not against machine guns. Besides, they take the cops.
Stick here, I said.
It's like a slaughterhouse, boss.
Yeah.
Come on, let's go after Moran. We get a couple of them anyway.
Oh.
We can show them.
Oh, let's get out of here.
But Moran.
Come on, let's move fast. Yeah? What is it?
He's outside, George.
What's his name?
Foster. Bill Foster.
Bill Foster. All right. Bring him in.
Yes, George.
And Lillian.
Yes?
Leave the blindfold on.
Sure, George. All right. Come on in.
Better help me through the door, miss.
I'll help you. Right through here.
Come in, Foster.
You Moran?
Go on out, honey. Leave us alone.
Sure, George. I'll be right outside.
Hey, how about let me take the blindfold off?
Not on your life, brother. What paper you with, anyway?
The American? Who was it, Moran? Who shot up the garage? Who killed those 7 guys?
Only Capone's gang kills like that.
And you lost a lot of talent. Gonna do anything about it?
If I was, I wouldn't tell it to a newspaper.
But you're not?
I made up my mind to quit Chicago.
Leave it all to Capone?
I didn't say I was yellow, and don't you print it.
Where are you going?
Just say I made up my mind to retire. I've been thinking about it a long time, and I just now made up my mind. But don't say I'm quitting because I'm scared of Capone.
Because you're not, huh?
Between you and me, Foster, I am. I know when I'm cooked. Capone's cooked, too, but he don't know it. It won't be me or anybody like me that gets him. But he'll be got. You'll remember that.
So, Don, George Bugs Moran foresaw the end of gang rule in Chicago. And it was not many months after he fled Capone's vengeance that the notorious gang leader was arrested by United States Treasury agents under the great Elmer L. Irie, and subsequently sentenced to a long term on Alcatraz.
But what about Bugs Moran, Mr. Heck?
Well, Don Moran remained in retirement until just a few months ago. But the time came when he once more thought he could make a killing. This time for $1,000,000.
Then you'll be back next week to give us another episode in the fantastic criminal life of George Bugs Moran?
I certainly will, Don.
And gangbusters, congratulations to all the law enforcement officers who participated in the investigation leading to the conclusion of this case. Tonight's case was dramatized by Stanley Niss and directed by William Sweets, with Ken Lynch and Charlotte Lawrence in leading roles. Don Gardner speaking. Gangbusters is a Phillips H. Lord production.
From sometime in the late 1940s, it's been gangbusters with the Devil and the Syndicate. Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Yesteryear, but join us again next week at this very same time, and why not invite a friend to listen? Together, enjoy more great moments from the golden age of radio. I'm Craig Roberts with those fabulous days of yesteryear. Till next time, so long.
Radio, remember radio. We'd sit and close our eyes and use our imagination. A comedy, mystery, a fireside chat. Together we sat, listening nightly to our favorite shows. Radio, I miss you. Sodio, vodio, dodio, do. Radio, I miss you.
Copyright the Swing and Big Band Preservation Society, Incorporated. All rights reserved.